Wallace didn't move.
I know.
Gus looked back at the gruesome fright of a face, but Wallace ignored him.
You guys going to eat now?
The soldier directed to Collie.
Thinking about it, you?
Wallace didn't answer right away.
I'm going to head on down there, take a few gas cans and plastic bottles, harvest any fuel for tomorrow because we'll need it. These pigs get thirsty fast. Okay, see ya.
Wallace walked back to his ride. Gus watched him strut that high noon gunslinger walk of his.
He can work it, can't he? Collie asked.
Gus neutrally cleared his throat, embarrassed at having been caught.
Come on, she said. You like pizza?
Holy shit, you have pizza?
Well, there's a box of pizza IMP in back of the rig. I peeked and saw pepperoni and cheese in there.
Jesus, Gus blurted. I mean, Jesus.
Don't get your hopes up. IMPs have come a long way, but even though it says pizza on the box, who the fuck knows what it really is?
Still. Collie walked back to the motorhome.
Yeah, if you had any beer, we'd be all set. Then again, sooner or later, someone will get a still running, or at least some beer carboys. Not too hard to do. All you need is a place with a constant temperature and then some patience.
We got the whiskey and all that other stuff, Gus heard himself say. Collie regarded him over his shoulder.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
But pizza doesn't really go well with rye, or vodka, or whatever. Collie reached the door.
In this case, it might very well be needed.
She later extracted the pizza from its silvery packaging and placed it on a cookie pan before popping it into an oven. Gus sat at the table. He split his attention between talking and watching her. When the pizza warmed up and the cheese ran, the interior filled with a glorious aroma Gus had remembered only from dreams. Then they were eating. Gus took two wedges, slapped them together like a sandwich, and sliced a section away with a knife and fork. Collie still had her front teeth, so she chomped down into hers. Both chewed for a while, eyeing the other.
Well, Gus said quietly after swallowing. That was terrible.
Yeah, Collie said, reaching for a glass of water. That was.
Smelled great, though.
True, but can't live on smell alone.
She picked up the packaging and mulled over the ingredients.
You know, I've heard red meat stays in your colon for up to 6 months, but in this case I don't think we'll have a problem.
Gus chuckled and cut away another bite.
You like that shit?
The world ended 4 years ago. Even the shittiest pizza isn't bad enough to throw away.
That's true, too, Collie said and tried another mouthful. Shit's dry, though. Should have nuked it instead of baking.
Gus shrugged.
You know, I remember this place that served up wicked pizza. I even know the guy who owned the place. And sometimes he'd even give me free stuff if the crust was just browned a shade too much.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he needed it done to just the right color. Too brown and people wouldn't buy it. A few times I'd be walking past his place, and he'd come out and ask if I wanted any that were too well done for the customers. Just a little bit dark was all it was, too, but it tasted like it slipped out of heaven.
I like a saucy pizza, Collie said. The more the better. This isn't saucy at all. I always made a point to ask for extra sauce on my pizza. Extra sauce. Easy enough, right? Nope. I'd get into fights with pizza people over it. Where the hell is my extra sauce? There's no extra sauce on that thing. What part of extra do they not understand? Maybe their oven is off kilter by about 10 degrees or so, and right in the back is where all the extra sauce slides off and pools up, you know, like this bubbling vat of goodness.
That's a good theory.
That works for me, Collie said. You think maybe the other ingredients might be more expensive? But I'm not so sure anymore. At least you'd never think the way some assholes guard it. The sauce is where the magic happens. For some people, it's cheese. For others, it's the crust. But with me, it's the sauce. It's the sauce, Kali finished. All about the sauce.
How you think Wallace is doing? Gus asked.
Ollie's doing just fine out there. Don't you worry about him.
Gus lowered his voice and leaned over the table. He creeps me out.
Kali leaned in as well.
He creeps most people out, but he's solid. Trust me on that.
Gus went back to eating. They finished in a few minutes, and Kali got up and pulled out a bottle of Santa Maria whiskey from a cupboard. She placed it on the table just off to the side and produced a pair of shot glasses. Gus eyed that amber bedevilment at his elbow and leaned back, stroking his patchy beard.
You don't partake? Kali asked, sitting down.
Well, yes and no, Gus told her. I did a couple of years back. Drank a lot. But then stopped for one reason or other.
You sure?
Kali asked, unscrewing the cap.
Gus eyed the bottle. Damn straight he could use one after the shit he'd seen and been through. Thing was, Maggie, Becky, and Chad were still out there somewhere. He wasn't an alcoholic, he told himself, and he could have that one drink if he wanted it. He'd earned it. But it would feel celebratory for some reason, and he wasn't in a celebratory kind of mood right then, not while his friends were still in danger.
No, he decided, thanks, I'm good.
Gus, Kali poured herself a shot.
Augustus. You know your name means the Exalted One? The name of the first great Roman Emperor.
That set him blinking. I did not know that.
Well, it does,
she said and smiled, hoisting her glass.
It sparkled.
Gus lifted his glass of water and tapped it. She buried her shot with one toss of her head while Gus sipped.
God damn,
Kali declared.
That burns.
The bottle gleamed as she refilled her glass. Gus watched morosely.
You know what this is? Kali asked as she poured. Courage. Not quite instant, but it's courage all the same. Or bravery. A remover of fear, even. Not a bad thing in the least. Even needed, I'd argue. Relished and savored. But like anything, some people do allow themselves to be carried away with it. That's dangerous. You know what I'm saying?
Gus nodded. He most certainly did.
Kali smiled comfortably then, and he focused on her scary eyes instead of her face.
Don't you worry, Augustus, she said firmly, studying his own scarred features, reading him. One way or another, tomorrow or the next, we'll find your doctor friend and those kids.
With that, she shotgunned her second drink and clapped the thick glass down on the table.
That's a promise, she said.
Suddenly miserable, Gus finished his water. Sometime later, Wallace paused outside Collie's motorhome. He didn't knock on the door, nor did he make any attempt to enter. He merely stood outside the glow of the lit window between a pair of cars and stared at the closed white blinds. Kali and Gus were talking in low tones that he caught snatches of, but he didn't go any closer, as much as he wanted to, as much as the poison of jealousy burned and tortured him. The minutes went by, every second lethal and demoralizing, like the flirtatious smile of one's mate aimed at another. Chairs squeaked, and he heard them get up from the table and saw a shadow behind the window. For a second, fear gripped him. Fingers pulled the blind down, then allowed them up. Wallace relaxed. But he tensed up once more when the lights winked out, dreading the next few moments. He heard noises then, perking his ears, as either Kali or Gus retired to the end of the motorhome, to the king-size bed lying beyond those walls. The other crawled up into the bunk above the driver's seat. Then, nothing. A tsunami of relief gushed through Wallace. It lasted only a few seconds, however. He could tell she liked him. Wallace remained motionless in the dark, becoming one with it, and felt the terrible ache that all souls experienced at one time or another in their lives. And final days. Chapter 25. Collie and Gus got up at 7 in the morning from their respective beds and assembled at the kitchen table. They breakfasted quietly on dried cereal without the milk and shared a mason jar of homemade vegetable soup that Collie had received from the townsfolk she protected. After eating, they lumbered outside to better appreciate the cold weather and the overcast sky. The blocked highway could be better seen, and the knots of unmoving cars and trucks below seemed to thin out in the distance.
"Morning," Wallace greeted them both as he shuffled around the rear of their motorhome.
Collie and Gus nodded in return, and Gus couldn't help but watch that slow, steady walk of his rescuer. Wallace's visor was down and stared back.
"My fly down or something?"
No, you're good," Gus sputtered. "You're good. Really. Sorry.
"You get everything last night?"
Collie asked, not paying attention to the exchange.
"Filled up what I could," Wallace reported. "Quiet night."
"What time did you turn in?" Gus asked, wanting in on the conversation.
"When I was tired."
"Didn't see the time?"
Wallace regarded him coldly.
"No. Ollie keeps his own hours," Collie explained as she studied the lumpy padding of cloud covering the sky. "He's the night shift, you could say, watching our backs while we sleep."
"Oh, Gus thought that was a great thing. So when do you sleep?"
"When I have to," Wallace stated, and wandered to the overpass rail.
Collie followed, and Gus hesitantly joined.
"Gonna have to back out of here. Won't be too much of an ass pain," Collie observed.
"Not for you."
She regarded Wallace with a questioning eye long enough for Gus to see concern on her ravaged face. She wiped at her nostrils and studied the lay of the land.
"The next question, then. Where do we go from here?" "There are some tire tracks in the grass about a quarter click back from the overpass ramp behind us," Wallace informed her. "We missed them last night."
"Cars?"
Collie faced the soldier.
"Yeah."
Wallace led them to the rail on the south side and pointed, revealing a rough trail about 100 meters or so back. A small line of cars had crushed the cold grass, leaving a trail in the small fields surrounding the overpass, easy to see from their vantage point once revealed. The trail turned off the highway and looped around the knot of the overpass, avoiding the unmoving traffic, and Gus lost sight of it farther up the highway where tall firs grew nearer the road. He assumed the trail reconnected with the highway just past the worst of the clutter.
"See, they drove off the highway," Wallace explained as he pointed. "Across the field, up over the east lane, then down into that field, before linking up with the road underneath us farther on up. Well past all that garbage and continuing onward. About 3 trucks, I'd say."
"How do you know they're trucks?" Gus asked.
"Tires and wheelbase," Wallace answered in that stoned tone of his. 2 or 3 days old, so the timeline's right."
Collie glanced at them both.
"Then let's roll."
Gus went to the rear of Wallace's RV and guided the soldier, backing his motor home and attached pickup down the overpass's slope. Gus did the same for Collie, admiring the way they both handled their rigs and the trailing loads. Both operators aimed the RVs toward the beaten path. Once they were off the ramp, Gus walked back to the side door and met Collie as she stepped out and looked across the field to the northeast, fixing upon the corner of the fir forest. She held up a hand.
"Listen," she said.
"What?"
"Just listen."
Frowning, Gus did and heard nothing other than Wallace's engine idling. Collie stepped away from her RV and gestured for Wallace to kill his engine. He complied, and Collie nodded for Gus to try again.
Still nothing.
"Follow me."
She went to the ladder affixed to the motorhome's rear. She climbed to the top, and Gus tried not to look at the camouflage design covering her ass, suspecting Wallace wouldn't be pleased. Still, it was hard not to do as she hauled herself up and over the roof, her camos pulling tight. Gus quickly looked at the ladder and concentrated on climbing. Once on the roof, he stood next to Collie, who pointed to a section of tall grass. The tire tracks cutting through the overgrown sward made Gus wonder how they missed something so obvious in the first place. The rest of the grassy expanse swayed in the breeze. Except, Gus squinted. There was no breeze. Yet, in places, the tall grass moved. "What is that?" he muttered, straining to see. "You have to ask," Collie chided. Then he saw, and even though he was sick of the dead, they still managed to surprise him at times. The nearest violent ripple reached the last thin curtain of grass bordering the truck-made trail. The grass collapsed outward as a discolored hand pushed through the yellow stalks. A head oozed out from the wall of grass. The locomotion of the rest of the gimp's body pushed its skull into the dirt to a point where Gus thought its spine might buckle free of its shoulders. The corpse crawled into daylight, one arm flopping along weakly as if the zombie had already taken damage to the head. Even at that distance, from the top of the motorhome, Gus managed to see how the face turned toward him and Collie.
"Jesus," Gus moaned. "Do we have to... watch?" The word died in his throat upon beholding the breadth of the undead charge.
The ripples in the field, each and every one, left broken creases in the unassuming grass, and the deadheads at ground level crawled forward at best possible speed.
"They probably caught a whiff of us last night," Collie said,
an eerie ghost of a smile on her face.
"Don't worry, we'll get through. But Jesus, you have to just marvel at what they are at times. What they're capable of."
More dead things pushed through the edges of the grassy trail and seeped into the light, with all the grace of pustules bursting under pressure, resembling hunters or soldiers wearing ghillie suits. They shifted, pausing only long enough to sense the aging trail they crept upon, before slinking toward the highway as if escaping a tar pit.
"I'd say," Collie continued, "they were lying dormant out there, somewhere in the grass, with no legs to walk on and nothing to tear into. Just regular old meat bags lying around and waiting for a whiff of something to come along. Or a noise. Hell, they might have heard those trucks as they passed through here 2 or 3 days ago, and only now are getting here, just in time to say hello to us. An entire mob of them."
She noticed Gus's discomfort for the first time.
"You know they can't hurt us now."
"Hmm. Huh, what's that now?"
"They can't hurt us. They're fucking ankle biters, if anything. I had more than a couple reach out and try and grab my foot, and all it took was a kick to put an end to that. And not a hard kick, either. They can still infect us, of course, but look at them. They're like human-sized caterpillars."
Gus didn't appreciate the simile.
"We'll get moving in a second," she assured him. "Just want to see how many are crawling through the grass. You don't see this much anymore, not on this scale. Or maybe I just haven't come across it in a while."
"Yeah, I think you might have missed a few," Gus said, distracted, pulling on his beard.
"They freak you out?"
"No, oh no." Then he admitted, "But they do make me nervous at times."
Collie snorted and went back to watching the advance. Some lines deeper in the field slowly curved south toward them with all the speed of tiger slugs, dredging themselves free of their graves. She'd started talking again, but Gus wasn't listening, mesmerized by the number of bodies pulling themselves through the grass.
"A tidal force about them,"
Collie finished when a horn blasted, startling Gus and breaking him free from the hypnotic pull of the approaching dead. Collie pursed her lips, not unpleasantly, and scowled at the motorhome at their backs.
"She's not happy about something."
Then the scowl was gone.
"He's probably right," she said, and climbed down from the roof. Gus followed.
They got into the RV. Collie deposited herself in the driver's seat and started the machine. Gus jumped into the passenger side, pulled his door closed, and locked it.
"Strap yourself down," she said. "Not sure if this rig's rated for off-road or not."
"But you're gonna try, right?"
"Oh, fuck yeah."
She steered the motorhome off the pavement and into the tall grass, keeping on the previous path already made by passing tires. The front bumper bit into the edge of the field with a teeth-rattling, gullet-raising bump and jostle. Gus leaned forward in his seat, eyes wide at the decomposing faces flashing in the grass, just before the dead went under the RV. The machine rolled over the zombies as if they were crusty pillows. Bones snapped and clattered off the chassis, and the path became even rockier.
"Like driving over fucking beach rocks," Collie shouted and hollered in pure adrenaline-fueled pleasure.
Beyond the dash and the face of the Winnebago, horrid faces lifted as the machine rattled over and squashed them. A few arms rose, flailing at the monstrosity flattening their ranks before being squashed themselves.
"Not so bad," Collie yelled.
The start of a disbelieving smile spread across Gus's face. Lord help him, he was enjoying the ride.
"Hold on," she shouted.
Just ahead, the cracked gray lick of pavement loomed, gravel having sprayed to the north where the previous trucks tore off once on asphalt. The motorhome hit the soft shoulder, and he was slammed forward. For an instant, Gus thought they weren't going to make it. The vehicle was too much of a boat and the incline too steep, but then he crashed back into his seat and the world tilted dangerously. Collie turned the wheel hard to the right, howling like a hillbilly on a year's worth of ecstasy. Then the ride smoothed out.
"More fun than fucking,"
she laughed and put her foot down. The RV responded and jumped forward in a burst of raw power. The trailer behind bucked and whumped over the shoulder and followed right along. It took Gus a second to realize he was laughing as well. His laugh subsided and he hurriedly checked his side mirror. Rising from their wake like a metallic whale came Wallace's RV. The front of the machine hit and rode up and over the shoulder in a spray of crushed stone, clearing it with effort.
"He made it," Gus said, eyeing the vehicle.
"No doubt in my mind,"
Collie declared as she focused on the empty road ahead.
"That boy always makes it."
Gus glanced over and saw a sad sheen of pride touching her warrior's profile. Then he looked ahead, feeling oddly at peace for the first time in days. The motorhomes rolled north, past wild meadows and trees shedding their exhausted red foliage. The pastures caught Gus's interest in particular, remembering how the deadheads had slipped under the motorhome's wheels.
"What?"
Collie asked while monitoring her speed.
"Wondering where the hell they all came from."
"The zombies back there?"
"Yeah."
Collie smiled.
"The dead travel, my friend. Haven't you realized that?"
Gus supposed he had.
"Forgot, I guess."
Captain Morgan rested in a cup holder, the leather twine fallen around the shoulders of the bottle. Gus reached down and adjusted him, making the officer a little more comfortable.
"Wallace and I once drove down the Trans-Labrador Highway,"
Collie stated, glancing over her camouflaged shoulder.
"Middle of nowhere. This was about 2 years after it all went to hell. We'd pull over and camp about half a click off-road at times. Even more middle of nowhere, right? Not even the odd picnic ground or nothing. I got up to take a leak one night, left my sidearm in the truck, first and last time ever, I might add, and while I was squatting, I hear a splashing coming from the nearby river. Thought it was a bear or a moose or elk or even a fucking crazy-ass monster squirrel. It walked the walk, you know? Or take a step, stop for a second, and then take another step, like it was strolling. And I tell you, nothing more unsettling than taking a leak in the woods and hearing noises coming closer. Anyway, I finished and just waited. Another mistake. But I did have my knife on me. Couple minutes later, I hear the thing coming through the woods, branches all snapping and breaking off. No secrecy there. And this fucking Mo comes waltzing toward me. 500 kilometers from nothing. But there it was. And there I was. Nearly caught with my pants down.
A red SUV appeared on the right, nose first into a ditch, bright cherry ass sticking up into the air, side door open and driver missing.
Couple of dirt roads coming up, Collie noted. I'll slow down. You look on that side. See if you notice any fresh tracks, disturbed, crushed stone, that sort of thing.
Gus nodded and leaned toward his window, rolling it down. Most of the roads led to a house or two, scattered along the highway on a whim. Those that could be seen from the road appeared deserted and not deserving of further inspection. What might have been a livestock farm came up on the right.
"Bet it's a chicken farm," Collie smirked.
A green sign appeared, informing them of the turnoffs for Londonderry, Debert, and Belmont. The names didn't mean anything to Gus, and another bolt of despair hooked his guts. So many places to look, so many to get lost in or hide. But what choice did he have? A slow minute later, they rolled to a stop at a crossroads.
"One of many," Collie said, scanning left and right as she switched off the motor. "Lots of little towns around here, and I haven't been through a quarter of them yet. Your call on what you want to do."
Gus gazed beyond the windshield. The left road went straight up a small knoll and hung another left, disappearing behind a row of fir trees. The right dipped into a forested gully before rising, turning left, and vanishing as well. Gus huffed and rubbed his forehead.
"How about we just stop here for a minute? Roll down the windows and listen. Something might come our way."
Collie regarded him, and he had to force himself not to stare at the mess of her nose.
"Army of Christ, crazy, bit it off," she said.
That jolted him.
"What?"
"You were trying hard not to look at my nose."
"I was?" To that, she only smiled. "Sorry."
"No need to apologize," Collie remarked. "You didn't do it, and I don't mind telling you the background. Better than having you sneak peeks all the time."
"Sorry."
"You say that a lot."
Then Gus smiled.
"Yeah, well, I mean it."
"Army of Christ, you said?"
"AOC. Operated in eastern Mali some 10 years back, causing hell for the local government. Anyway, the guy actually dropped on me from the ceiling while I was clearing a room. Just like a goddamn spider. I pinned him to the ground, but he kicked out one of my feet and my face dropped into his and..."
Collie snapped her teeth twice, a disturbing picture.
"Needless to say, I lost my mellow."
"Fuck me gently," Gus breathed.
She scratched at an eyebrow.
"Yeah, took it off in one bite. Surprised the hell out of me. Right through my balaclava."
Gus shook his head.
"What's a balaclava?"
"That's a ski mask. British troops wore them originally during the Crimean War in 1854. Or 64, one of them years. My military history is getting rusty."
"Never heard of it before."
"What, the war or the balaclava?"
"Both," Gus chuckled.
"You watch action movies?"
"Well, yeah, used to anyway."
"You'll see special forces wear them a lot."
Gus knew what special forces wore, but a spark went off behind his eyes and he regarded her in a disbelieving light.
"Your special forces?"
"Was SF," Collie answered. "Now, I'm freelance."
"I didn't think women could be special forces."
Collie smirked.
"Not true, though the old guard used to think that way. They used to say women weren't capable enough mentally or physically to carry out covert objectives. Wrong, of course. Hell, I knew some dykes who would throw down in bars with broken bottles if it came to a fight, and they'd use them, too. As the world went on, it got clear that female operatives were, in fact, more valuable than a man in certain situations."
"Why's that?" Gus asked.
"Because we're girls," Collie smiled coldly. No one expects an unarmed woman to rip out a throat with her bare hands or thumbscrew the eyeballs to the back of an attacker's skull.
Speechless, Gus's mouth fell open.
Well, she clarified, not everyone.
Gus still had nothing to say.
Don't worry, Collie assured him. Just remember to drop the toilet seat when you're finished and we're good.
He'd definitely remember to do that.
What about you?
Gus glanced over at her.
What about me?
What happened to your face? Since we're disclosing history here, quid pro quo.
Parts of my face were burned in a house fire. My nose was busted by an ex-girlfriend. She knocked out my teeth, too. Happened about 2 years ago.
Collie chuckled.
She didn't take too kindly to you dumping her?
Well, she dumped me.
And she hit you? Wow. A right vengeful bitch.
A moment's hesitation.
Yeah.
Collie shook her head.
Women, eh?
Well,
Gus shrugged and stared at the road.
I did shoot her back.
That earned a what-the-fuck look. Wallace's fingers clenched the steering wheel with growing impatience until he caught himself.
Control, he told himself. Control.
What were they yakking about up there, and why had they stopped dead on the road? He turned off the engine and cracked his window, listening. He picked up nothing but soft bird song.
Birds.
He wondered how they tasted. Control flashed across his mind like a red warning light. Food wasn't an issue then. Not right then, anyway, but in a day or two it might. Wallace opened his mouth as wide as possible, making his ears pop, and noticed that the aches in his joints had reached his hands, his fingers in particular. He released the steering wheel and shook them out, making and releasing fists. Usually the pain wasn't so bad after he'd eaten, but that time his aches sparkled dully, letting him know they were still around. Perhaps he'd slipped another degree. That thought rattled through his mind. Yes, he concluded with a pinch of glumness, that might very well be the reason. Wallace considered getting out and walking over to Collie's window to check on their status, but his fingers made him wary of doing so. His joints continued to ache, but were they worse? He wasn't sure, still too preoccupied with the development of his fingers. Part of him didn't want to find out.
Control, he vowed.
Chapter 26. Hearing nothing but far-off birds, Collie started the RV and drove on down the highway. Wallace dutifully followed, bringing up the rear. A few more houses sprang up along the road, nestled amidst wild-growing lawns and backyard jungles. Most of the structures appeared to be in reasonable shape, considering the apocalypse was into its fourth year. Some homes had boards nailed over their first-floor windows. Others had cars parked haphazardly in paved driveways. Gus noticed an open door on the third house they drove by and realized darkly that the previous front doors had also been left open.
You better pull over, Gus said.
See something?
Maybe. The houses on this side, their doors are all open. What about yours?
Only passed a couple, but yeah, why?
She stopped the huge vehicle.
Well, Gus smiled. That's what I'm going to find out.
You okay doing that?
Yeah, I think so.
Just holler then if you need any help.
I'll remember that.
Gus thought about all the times he'd cleared a house by himself. He hopped out and unzipped his jacket for easy access to the twin sigs under his arms. He looped the baseball bat scabbard over his neck and checked his boot knife. After a second, he checked his jeans. He wished he had something thicker covering his legs.
You okay? Collie asked.
Yeah, just wishing I had something for my legs. Leather pants or something.
You'll be okay, she assured him. You didn't make it this far on just leather pants. As weird as that sounds.
Gus supposed that was true.
Be a few minutes.
He closed the passenger door. Dead weeds pushed through gaping cracks, exposing frozen earth and conjuring an image of something massive forcing its way up underneath the paved driveway. Gus walked along the pavement, keeping his eyes on the tall grass. The motorhome huffed behind, moved, and stopped again in a squeal of brakes. An empty pool lay to the right, dull green ringing its cement edges. The front door to the house loomed closer, a brass knocker fixed in the center of a glossy wooden design. The home was two stories covered in bright yellow siding. A blue Mustang and a forest green Jeep were parked before a garage with its door heaved high, the interior gutted. Gus's boots scuffed to a soft halt, and he studied the garage, knowing full well the difference between sloppy and ransacked. Whoever had gone through the place wasn't being particular. Someone had taken anything there to be had. That left the house. Gus crept up to the front door and placed his back against the right side, stepping into what might have been a stomped-out flower bed. He inhaled and wished he had a helmet. The door itself didn't appear forced. "Fuck it," he grunted and peered inside the house.
"Hey, anybody home?"
He shouted perhaps a little too loudly, but what the hell, he'd get back into form eventually.
"Anyone?"
No answer. No sound at all.
"All right, listen. I'm coming in. If someone's in there, let's talk first, okay? The door was open and I'm just checking things out. Just want to make sure all's well, so don't shoot me, okay? No shooting. And don't club me upside the head either. Already had my bell rung enough this week, and I look like shit because of it. My chest, too, for that matter. Don't want to get slashed again or stabbed or strung up by the hands or feet. And since we're on the subject, don't be grabbing for my goddamn balls either, okay? Hear me? Don't grab my balls. Damn things are dangling to my knees now anyway, but I'd like to keep them a little while longer, all right? Got all that? Okay, then."
He took a deep breath.
"Here I come."
Fully expecting to hear that dead lung rasping he'd heard so many times before, Gus stepped into the doorway, hand on his bat, and saw nothing inside the naturally lit mudroom or the corridor beyond. A white-carpeted staircase had soaked up a wide gash of blood, some of which splashed spectacularly against the wall. Two plastic 12-gauge cartridges, blue, lay at the base of the steps, and he nudged one with his boot. Hearing nothing, he sniffed and got only cold, fresh air.
"I have a bat, and I'm taking it out just in case you're a dead fucker,"
he scolded himself, suddenly feeling uneasy about the profanity.
"Undead, I meant undead.
Jesus." Bat in hand, Gus eased into a gutted living room. The guts of sofa and chair cushions had been ripped out and strewn across the floor, while a coffee table had been chopped into ugly chunks of fiber. A shotgun blast had killed a flat-screen TV, while the corner behind the device had broken beer bottles piled quite high. The fireplace at the far end might have been lit up with a flamethrower, the hearth twinkling with smashed glass. But no bodies. It didn't bode well in Gus's mind. The rest of the house was clear, though in disarray, obviously searched for goods. Even the renovated basement, which he descended into without a flashlight, had been trashed. More destruction had been wreaked on the downstairs bedroom and rec room, and the toilet in the washroom was full of dried fecal matter. Gus wasn't an expert on shit, a notion he reckoned some might dispute, but it looked as though he'd missed whoever had used the basement john by days. No more than a week, tops. They'd come into the home, and whatever they couldn't take, they destroyed. The back deck and yard didn't reveal any wrongdoing and was untouched in comparison to the house. Gus wandered over to the pool and saw that its sea-green depths were filled with dead brush. He lingered at the edge and looked up, seeing Collie walking cautiously along the driveway, her hands on her sidearms. Wallace moseyed far behind her. Scanning a tree line of elms and the odd fir, Gus stepped back from the pool and meandered along a patio walkway, meeting Collie at the front of the house.
"Thought I'd get out and stretch my legs."
She studied the staring dormers of the home.
"See anything?"
"No," Gus replied. "Anything happened here happened days ago. The place has been looted, and lived in for a night at least. There's a fireplace in the living room that looks like it might have been lit up with gasoline. No one's in there. No bodies, nothing. Though there's plenty of blood on the walls and dried shit in the cans."
Collie made a face, and Gus immediately regretted his words.
"I'm sorry, I mean..."
"It's okay," she said, amused. "I'm not a saint, so don't worry."
Wallace's grin, however, even though it hadn't changed at all below the visor, suddenly struck Gus as smugly pleased.
"Something on your mind?" Gus asked him.
Wallace stopped in the driveway, and a person could almost hear the squeals of his joints. The soldier gazed around, his visor taking in the deserted landscape.
"No."
"You seem pretty happy about something," Gus observed.
"It's just the way my face is these days,"
Wallace explained with eternal patience.
"So fuck off."
That relaxed, delivered under the radar expletive straightened the slouch in Gus's back.
"What did you say to me?"
Instead of replying, Wallace shook his head.
"Whatever happened here, we missed it."
"I think I just said that," Gus pointed out.
"Now it's official."
"Ah, I see."
"I'm heading back to the machine," Wallace stated. "We should get rolling, see if this pattern continues along the road."
The soldier took his time returning.
"Did I say something?" Gus asked Collie.
"No, don't worry about him."
"He told me to fuck off."
"Just let that one go."
"Yeah, but..."
Then Gus dropped it and switched from Collie to Wallace walking back to his RV to the house just searched. Collie scanned the sky.
"He's having a hard time these days, for reasons that are obvious. Some days he's fine, and others he can be a little grouchy. I know you don't mean nothing by the looks, but he picks up on them and it puts him off. Just keep that in mind."
"What's wrong with him then?"
"I think you can see."
"Yeah, well, I don't think I can wait for him to explain things."
Collie faced him, and Gus once again was struck by the twin holes of her face and those startling eyes.
"Let's move on. Check some more houses."
She didn't wait for an answer. By the time the day darkened with evening, they had checked 5 more residences along the highway. Some places were hidden behind fences of trees, while others presided over front lawns that had probably been the envy of the neighborhoods at one time, but were overgrown and yellowed. Sometimes Gus went into the house, sometimes Wallace. The soldier didn't apologize for his earlier remark, which irritated Gus, even though he knew he shouldn't have been staring at the guy. Still, in his mind, Wallace could have been a little more civil.
Or maybe, Gus considered, maybe the guy had a point.
Their collective thoughts centered on the growing mystery of the houses. 3 of the homes had been forced into, the doors splintered and hanging off the hinges. In 2, shotgun cartridges as well as 9mm brass casings lay around desiccated corpses made dead yet again. In other residences, entry wasn't forced, which suggested someone had actually lived there until whoever was making the rounds had come along. Perhaps the homeowners had welcomed the visitors with open arms before becoming victims. Gus, Collie, and Wallace didn't think they were victims, however, as there were no signs of executions to the degree Gus had witnessed on his farm, nor were there any corpses. All properties had been scoured clean of clothes, food, water, fuel, and anything else useful.
"Someone's being a pack rat,"
Collie declared, relaxing in the driver's seat of her RV with a glass of rye whiskey. The interior blinds had been pulled, and a single light turned on, drawing from the battery, as Wallace had cautioned them about turning on the generator. Heat was a luxury they'd have to do without that evening, so both sat in the dim interior, bundled up in their day's clothing and outerwear, recapping the day's discoveries. Wallace roamed outside, having volunteered to keep watch through the night. Gus sat at the small table and swished a glass of water, still holding out on cruising the booze boat until Maggie and the kids had been found. That would be reason enough to drink, although he had twice caught himself wanting to pour himself a shot and down the whiskey like cold tea. He wasn't entirely surprised by the urges, but he didn't give in.
"Yeah," Gus said slowly. "Or something else."
"You got a theory?"
He took a breath, took another pull of his drink, and refilled his glass from the bottle on the table.
"I ever tell you about the time I was almost eaten alive by rats?"
Collie's face furrowed with interest, and Gus gave her a history lesson. The story came out of him easily, minus the details about him attempting suicide by way of alcohol poisoning.
"Holy shit," she breathed when the story had been told. "Rats?"
"Rats.
Never saw anything like that in the last 4 years."
"Maybe it's just an East Coast thing."
"Sure as fuck hope so," Collie declared. "But there wasn't any evidence of what you just described to me. The dead in the hallways and such were still there, remember?"
"Yeah," Gus conceded. "All right, so it's a living problem then."
"Possibly. One thing's for sure. This kind of operation takes time, going from door to door and loading up everything of use. If nothing's happening to our raiders, then we'll be coming upon them sooner or later."
"What then?" Gus asked.
"Then we'll see," Collie said and took a shot from her glass. "Some folks have gone over to the dark side, like our little group of independent highwaymen who'd hung you out for dinner. They need to be dealt with case by case."
"Yeah."
Gus was not entirely convinced.
"One thing I like about operating solo,"
Collie studied her near-empty glass,
"without a chain of command. Something both Ollie and I agree upon."
This interested Gus.
"What's that?"
"It's the distinct absence of rules."
"Rules?"
Collie smiled coldly.
"Of engagement."
Chapter 27. Gus stirred, woke up, and stared at the ceiling. He turned in early the night before, emotionally and physically drained, leaving Collie to her drinking and removing himself from that particular temptation. He rolled over to the edge of his bunk above the driving area, rubbed his face, and peeked out toward the kitchenette area, seeing slivers of light through closed blinds. Morning. The pocket of warmth underneath the blankets made him hesitate to get up, but that wouldn't do in the least. Not while Maggie and the kids were still unaccounted for. The night before, he dreamed of them being whisked away by, of all things, a large truck with comically oversized wheels. The bathroom door opened, distracting him from his memories, and he glanced up to see Collie stepping out wearing her camo pants and a black sports bra. Her skin glistened, wet and sleek. She nimbly padded away into the bedroom area with barely a sound where she shut the door. Suddenly wide-eyed and awake, Gus released his breath. Collie's face had been mauled over the years, and she'd probably be the first to admit it. But that unexpected flash of skin was untouched, muscular, and not just a little tight. The curve of her hips suggested that everything covered by the camos was also unspoiled and perfectly serviceable. Serviceable. He reminded himself that he was having thoughts about another guy's wife.
You sick fuck.
Hot guilt flowed throughout his chest and face. After 40 minutes on the road, a house made a break in the blur of yellow and red timberland. A long dirt lane linked the highway to a garage. The owners might have been farmers of some kind, although the high grass blanketing the surrounding fields gave no hint as to what might have been grown, other than hay. A green tractor stood guard on the first bend in the lane. A Victorian-style two-story house waited beyond, painted a fading forest green that clashed with the late autumn fire surrounding the property.
"What do you think?" Gus asked.
"Best check it out," Collie said.
"I'll do it," Gus volunteered.
You sure about that?
Yeah, why not? Collie shrugged.
Go on in. I'll keep the engine running. Don't want to take it over that road.
All right.
Now watch that grass. I don't see anything moving right now, but that could change.
Yes, Mother.
Don't you be calling me your mother. I'll slap your ass.
That made Gus snort as he climbed out of the RV. The fresh, cold air tasted fine, and he paused to take in a deep lungful. Wallace's rig had pulled up behind Collie's and switched off. The soldier was a silhouette behind the wheel. Gus didn't spare any more time looking in that direction. He got walking, hearing nothing except the scrunch of boots on frozen ground. The Victorian's Heights consisted of dormers and a lot of awkward angles, which would have taken a lot of fuss and potential acrobatics at the end of a ladder. Gus didn't miss his old job. A silver Mustang was parked at the corner, a molded torpedo, if there ever was one. The muscle car perked his interest for all of a second before he settled on the Victorian's front door. It was open. He stopped a good 20 feet before the threshold. He took his bat in hand, thankful for its reassuring weight, and proceeded. "Hello," he asked, slowing as the shade of the front door's overhang engulfed him. "Anyone in there? Anyone home? Just coming in to check the place out, see if all's well. Let's talk if you're okay with that." His own voice sounded as though it were lying, and Gus wondered if someone a little less friendly had recently said those same words on that porch. Nothing moved inside, and he held his breath, waiting again for the graveyard wheeze he'd come to know so well. Time crept on, and the house's main hallway remained empty. Glancing back at Collie's RV, he waved, scratched his balls for luck, and disappeared inside. He found eggshell white walls with elegant baseboards and dirtied hardwood floors. Dried dirt trailed off into the house, ignoring a hall that led to an archway and what appeared to be a staircase. Gus knelt to inspect the granules, glancing back toward the door and the lane he'd walked along. The tracks spooked him. Gus stood, softened his step, and followed them cautiously around a corner into a living room. It looked cozy, the furniture in respectable shape. The tracks disappeared midway through. The hairs at the back of his neck rose in a chill. Something was setting him off, but he hadn't processed exactly what. Gauze-thin shears hung over the picture window, whitening the overgrown lawn. Unseen strings of tension filled the room, and with every movement Gus made, he felt those strands tighten on him. He felt for the shaft of his bat, reconsidered, and opened his jacket. His palm slid around the holster of his left Sig Sauer, and he eased it out, keeping it flat against his thigh. Navigating his way around a sizable coffee table, he widened his view past the far corner and saw an open dining area, and the remains of what appeared to be a meal. Chicken bones. Gus stood and studied the food, seeing a bit of meat still remaining on a thigh. As soon as he saw the scraps, he realized what was bothering him besides the tracks. The smell. The smell had set him off. That cold chicken odor just starting to stink up the house. His pulse rate increased, and he fought down the impulse to run through the house just to relieve the swelling ball of suspense in his chest. He stepped softly, carefully into the dining room area and glanced out a window into the backyard. The RVs could barely be seen through those snowy living room shears. An archway joined the dining area, and Gus kept his gun by his thigh as he leaned around its corner. Empty kitchen. Nothing else. At least nothing there. The sink contained two empty plastic bottles. He took one, saw beads of water on the inside, and carefully placed it on the counter. A second archway completed the circle of the first floor and brought Gus to the white carpeted stairs leading to the second story, as well as a nearby door leading to a basement, presumably. Straining to hear, Gus moved to the foot of those stairs, his attention divided by the door right there and the upstairs staircase. He wanted to open the door, but found himself leaning forward, sticking his head out and looking upstairs. A hallway and a door to the immediate left were at the top, while shadows darkened the upper level, as if someone had closed all the doors and drawn the curtains. Any second, Gus fully expected some ghoulish face to peek out from between the ornate banisters over his head, leering with bug-eyed insanity. He waited, feeling time dragging, licked his lips, and strained to hear anything that might provide a clue, knowing if something did appear, he'd probably shit himself.
"Anyone up there?"
He heard no answer, but sensed that someone had heard. The hardwood stairs might have been steeped in molasses, they were so dark, and he knew just by looking at them the damn things would squeak. Apprehension grew, and Gus knew he was drawing things out, delaying the inevitable. But he'd been caught by surprise before, and he would much rather wait than have his balls grabbed again. Or worse.
"Hey, if you're up there," he said quietly, eyes flickering from the upstairs to the door just across from him, a step and an arm's length away. His nerves thrummed with low-grade anxiety.
"Why not come on out and we'll talk? Hell, I have some bottled deer that might go well with that chicken you were having."
His tongue rested in the empty space of his missing front teeth as he listened for movement, a sign that his words were reaching a set of ears. None came, however.
"Come on now. You're freaking me out here. Come on down and we can talk. Maybe even be friends. You never know, right?"
A sheet of cold slipped over his head and enveloped him, a frightening sensation some had felt upon wandering haunted places. As sure as God was Gus's witness, someone waited for him upstairs, for good or for bad. The Sig patted his thigh, thrumming to be used, and he willed himself to stop. He arched his head to further improve his field of vision, but saw nothing. Jesus Christ, why couldn't it have been a gimp? And why couldn't he have a shot of something to calm his nerves? He hadn't been that on edge back in Windsor.
"Maybe," his inner voice suggested, "it's because you know it's a person this time. Damn gimps were a hell of a lot easier to evict from a house instead of a person. He should just walk around and..." Click.
That soft note froze Gus in place, widened his eyes, and caused him to nearly bolt. His energy level spiked, screaming a flight reflex. He didn't, and remained rooted, scanning the upstairs. He leaned forward and willed more to happen, but nothing did. What he heard might have been a hinge moving just a fraction or the weight of a foot making the floor creak. Get Collie. Where that thought had come from, he wasn't sure, but as he peered upstairs, it seemed like a pretty solid plan, rather than standing around like a dork hoping to catch a peek. Whoever or whatever it was above him wasn't going to come down, and he was becoming far too worried to venture up. Stalemate. He'd reached an impasse. "Oh, fuck this," Gus huffed and backed up as quietly as he could toward the front door.
"Wait."
A whispery, cancerous voice floated downstairs and yanked his spine like the sensation of mice scurrying over bare feet. Gus stepped back to the landing, pointed his gun at the gloomy upstairs, scanning for a body.
"Wait,"
the voice whispered again, just beyond the railing, keeping out of sight. "What?" Gus asked, placing his back to the wall, struggling to contain his fear.
"Wait."
"I'm waiting. So what now?"
Silence.
"Wait."
Then a smoker's giggle hung on the air, a deep, soul-frightening rattle that one might hear from a person on a deathbed. That god-awful, sickening sound, chock-full of unseen madness, made Gus weak in the knees. His pulse pounding in his ears, Gus's eyes flickered about the upstairs as a coldness settled in, pricking his scalp and traveling all the way to the root of his ballsack. He reached out and gripped the knob of the closed door next to him.
"Wait,"
the voice giggled once more, struggling to maintain control.
I want you to to see something.
Then a ponderous step fell on bare hardwood, accompanied by a rusty cackle that sounded positively dipped in evil. A scree of steel on wood followed, then another ominous dragging of a foot.
Wait there. I want you.
A shadow thickened through the banisters, the reality of it stabbing through whatever resolve Gus might have had. His breath quickened, and the urge to not want to see what was coming filled him. Whoever was speaking had been touched by the apocalypse, and Gus was certain of the evil taint approaching. The gun in his hand trembled, faltered. The silhouette dragged itself forward. A mask of pearly white loomed in a flash of pulse-pounding terror. A mop of bleached hair hung in tatters around the face. Then Gus saw the machete. He raised his gun, but the knob he'd grabbed to steady himself twisted in his palm, making him stumble off balance just as the door burst open and the barrel of a large-caliber sidearm pressed into his left cheek. Gus's breath caught in his chest, as if releasing it would kill him instantly.
"Click! Don't you move," warned a voice that could have belonged to a human rattlesnake. "Don't you fucking move."
Gus's arm faltered and dropped. He eyed a face every bit as pale and as crazy-looking as the one overhead.
"Wait!"
The thing at the top of the stairs whispered in sandpapery fashion, ending the word in a wicked giggle. The voice sounded as if it stood at the other end of a very long tunnel. The face, with the gun on Gus, reached around and grabbed his pistol, tossing it onto the stairs.
"Fresh meat, Dwight," the face grinned, bearing a smashed fence of a smile. "Fresh meat,"
Dwight repeated, leering. He leaned out over the railing, long hair drooping, machete held against the valley of an elbow.
"Cut him up."
Gus's sphincter clenched at the words.
"Can't, you fucking moron," the face said. "I got the gun on him. You come down here and cut him." "Wait,"
Dwight said, and leaned over the railing and slashed at Gus's eyes, the wind from the weapon flickering his eyes. Once, twice, and a third time he waved that blade as quick as the shocked gasp leaving Gus's lungs. He turned his head into the gun, avoiding the last swing of the machete by only a finger width, gouging his cheek on the hard barrel. Dwight leaned back and cackled.
"Bring the little shit closer."
Oh, Jesus. Gus's knees must have stiffened because the face stood back with his back against the open door, assuming a duelist's pose, and set his jaw.
"Don't you fucking move, I told you. Else I pull the trigger and spray your chin across the stairs. Ruin the carpet." "Bring him closer, I said,"
Dwight commanded in that smoker's bray. Gus's eyes darted to the face.
"You heard him. Go on up."
Gus closed his eyes. "I can't."
"Fuck you mean you can't?"
"I'll shit myself." The face broke into a chuckle, jamming the pistol into Gus's cheek all the harder.
"You hear that, Dwight?"
"I heard."
"Boy's gonna squirt out some pipe right here if he comes any closer."
Dwight leaned back like a perturbed Viking and simmered with the information.
"Goddamn gross is what it is. It'll fuck up the house."
"Fuck up the house," Gus panted, petrified. "Fuck. Fuck up the carpet."
"Don't fucking live here anyway,"
the face growled and licked his half-stocked set of teeth.
"That's right,"
Dwight agreed and swaggered to the stairs, dragging the machete's edge along the railing.
"Houses all along this road. I could shit all over this one, and it don't mean a goddamn thing. Just go get a new one." "But who else is out there in them Winnebagos?"
That mortified Gus. "Huh?"
"Answer him."
The gun gouged deeper, screwing up Gus's lips.
"My friends. My friends. Jesus. My friends are out there."
How many? The face demanded as Dwight placed his full weight on the first step, forcing a curt squeal to perforate the air. Huh? The face tried to insert the barrel of the gun into Gus's cheek.
Fucking say huh once more, and I'll pull this trigger.
Two, Gus immediately revealed, his own face as white as the living room shears, and his will crumbling into nothing. There wasn't any bravado. There weren't any quips. There was only a gun pressing into his face and a machete descending the stairs, both wielded by two clearly unstable individuals.
What's that? The face asked.
Two. Dwight stopped three steps away and placed the machete's edge to Gus's bald scalp.
Nothing to chop here.
The blade dropped to Gus's beard.
Could use a shave, though. How about it? How about letting me shave you? That sound like a good idea?
No. The face dragged the gun barrel up across Gus's cheek and parked it tightly against the corner of his eye.
No.
Dwight giggled.
We got a funny one, Ricky.
Yeah, Ricky chuckled.
Or how about...
Dwight angled the blade to Gus's chin and leaned in close, all mirth disappearing from his features, replaced by a twisted yearning to perform some medieval science.
How about I just chew that nose of yours off? Just bite it off. Bet that would make you dance, huh? Make you jiggle? Course, you'd be dead anyway, 'cause Ricky would put a bullet into your skull. Unless he shoots out both knees. Keep you alive and stationary. To a point, anyway. How's that sound?
Dwight's frightening mug stopped not 2 inches from a trembling Gus.
I asked,
Dwight repeated in a hateful whisper, eyeing up his captive's profile from chin to brow.
How's that sound?
Gus set his jaw, clamping down on the scream boiling toward his throat but failing to stop the pitiful squeal emerging. He looked ahead, through the archway and the distant kitchen, and saw Collie. She was handling a gun, two-fisted and aiming. Gus screamed. Ricky's head exploded. The gun at Gus's temple fired over his head. Dwight's threatening leer softened in puzzlement in the split instant of his companion's death just before his own head spattered against the wall. The machete fell to the floor as both Dwight and Ricky crumpled. Gus remained standing, bug-eyed and barely breathing. Then his vision narrowed as darkness rushed in from the edges. His legs gave out, and he lost consciousness.